Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to a December 5, 2008 segment from the Kentucky Water Fuel Museum. With us tonight, a return guest, Spody Odie from Ruskin, Florida. Spody, are you with us?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, welcome to the program again.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, I can't even remember when it was, but I know it wasn't too long ago that we were discussing. Maybe it was a follow-up to your event down there in Ruskin.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay. Well, we have plenty to talk about, in particular something that you called me about this evening, and that is what seems to be a breakthrough in the voltage necessary to perform electrolysis. Perhaps you could start out by telling us what it is that you and your associate, your lab technician, what you were
yeah.
up to.
Yeah, well, as you met Kim, and other people that were at the show had met Kim.
Okay, now when we say Kim, people might think you're talking about a woman. Kim
yeah,
is
no,
a
no,
he.
No, Kim Lifey, yeah. Kim Lifey, Clarence Lifey, it goes by Kim.
Okay, and he was responsible largely for the ability to perform the event down there in Ruskin, right?
Yeah, he was the host of the Alternative Energy Show and Tell Part 2. Larry Jarbo did the one up in D.C., and then we had agreed to do a show down here, and Kim was kind enough to be the host of this show that you were able to be at, and several others. That we
okay,
have
so
on.
So the two of you are sort of like Dr. Frankenstein and Igor or something?
Yeah. Twin brothers of another mother, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so the two of you have spearheaded several notable things in recent months regarding electrolysis, and one of those things is the use of stainless steel that has been processed by passivation or what's known also as...
electrolysis.
Electropolishing?
Electropolishing, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
With the help of Dustin from Albright down here, you know, because I mean that's what they do all the time, and they've done things for the space station that's up in the sky right now that everybody pays attention to every now and then, because they're watching NASA's channel.
But the average person who admires stainless steel, I mean, stainless steel is a very popular metal now for kitchens. People are putting it in their homes, you know, their appliances and so on. And
or the DeLorean car, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. But stainless steel has become a very popular metal in terms of home decor and whatnot. And yet the average person has no idea that there's an additional process that can be that stainless steel can be subjected to that makes it much more appropriate for certain specialized uses.
Yeah, well, the marine industry is aware of it because the electropolishing, you know, brings the chromium to the surface and gives it that gleam, but it also makes it anti-corrosive. The decay or the
the discoloration or the oxidation or
yeah.
whatever you want to call it, huh?
Yeah, exactly. So it stays like what seems to be indefinitely, but we have a very short period of time here on Earth, so we can't say indefinite. But yeah, it's
right.
a long time.
Yeah. So what's interesting, though, is that when you take a plate or a tube or whatever type of electrode material you're using for your electrolysis cell, if you subject it to this treatment first before using it in your cell, then what are the results? What are the noticeable results?
I had stumbled upon it by accident because of the machine shop that had done our material. They had done other marine equipment. For the electropolishing, and then when we started doing it through the electrolyzers, we noticed that the amperage drop, the amperage load of the cell itself had dropped, and that the gas production itself had actually increased for the given voltage and load that was there.
And how was that explained? Has there ever been an explanation for that?
The process itself runs at 20 volts DC, about 600 amps, to set up the removal of the iron oxide and brings the chromium to the surface of the plate, which within the passivation gives it sterility. There's no more decay or galvanic reaction through the metal. And when the iron oxide is removed and you have, like we had talked about before, it opens up a porosity on there where if the iron is no longer there, that void that was there is now open for subjugation to the potassium or sodium hydroxide. Well, we're still using the potassium, but the potassium or sodium hydroxide that's used as your electrolyte in the process of the electrolysis to produce the hydrogen and or the oxygen, depending on whether you're anodic or cathodic reaction.
Okay, and it does seem somewhat contradictory to say that a surface becomes polished and has more of a sheen at the same time that it's becoming more porous. That doesn't sound quite right, does it?
No, yeah, yeah. Usually
you associate porosity with a lack of sheen, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It would be, like, very dull.
Right.
But it's being removed electrochemically.
And on a microscopic level, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you can't see it with your eye, right?
Yeah.
You can't look at a piece of...
Well, you can if you look at it, because you can comb your hair.
Well, what I'm saying is, okay, so it has a mirror polish. But what I'm saying is, if you looked very closely, like with a magnifying glass, would you see the pores open on the piece that had been subjected to passivation?
Well, that would, other than a magnifying glass, I would say it would have to get down to the microscopic level, because within a magnifying glass within itself, you're only going to see more of your own reflection because the chrome has been brought up. But on the microscopic level, I say sure that there's cattle corrals sitting there and there's cows waiting to get out. But to break that barrier, though, I mean, to release any more iron oxide into an electrolytic cell, you have to go above that 600 amp level to have that reduction brought.
Which would never happen.
Yeah, no. I mean, especially on an automobile or, even on a stationary unit where you're running, like Bob would run like a 220 volt, 15 amps, you're still not even going to be close.
Right.
So
we're talking about here is an end to red gunk, right?
Yeah.
An end to mud.
Sludge, yeah. Yeah.
And the reason why it's red is because it's iron oxide. Is that it?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and...
I was listening to your show tonight with while I was working on the website with Daniel Smith, and he's the gentleman that you have done the interview with. He's getting ready to, or their company is getting ready to release with Daewoo a 100% operating on hydrogen, hydroxy vehicle to the general public. And then he had brought across within your conversation about the whole passivation process with the steel that they had already solved three problems in one keynote thing. And that's what I'd come across in my discoveries of stumbling upon passivation itself, is that a lot of things had took place all at the same time. No more contamination. The amperage dropped down. The gas efficiency went up. And when I heard that interview tonight, it's like, wait a second, this is Europe now talking, and it's like, okay, we're all on the same page. And this is something that's like the collective consciousness is right now at a pinpoint where we're all coming together, and there's something beautiful about to take place. I mean, something beyond everyone's wildest imagination.
Well, I would have to agree, because even if it doesn't come as a result of this technology being introduced, even if it's rejected by a selfish and greedy society, there's still something beautiful on the horizon, and it has nothing to do with what humans are doing. Either way, there's something beautiful coming. Whether or not it has anything to do with our efforts remains to be seen.
Or what we just fall into. Just the divine providence is coming into our order, and gifts are being given to us, and those who have their eyes open to see them and witness them and explain them to someone else, we are on the line. Right now, it's as high as a divine order as I can witness in my own life.
Yeah.
All
now,
of my own life.
The only thing that I see that might negate some of this enlightenment is the low fuel prices that they're now. I mean, how can you go from $4 and something a gallon 1 month and the next month say that it's going to drop below $1 a gallon in the coming months? And what justification is there for this kind of rip-off and then sudden drop-off of prices? And I wonder to what extent it coincides with the public's interest in alternative energy technology. It's like you gouge the public, and then when they start looking for alternatives, then you throw the cheap fuel back at them, get them complacent again.
I think what happened is they just squeezed us too hard, and now the general populace itself is coming to the point where we're not taking it anymore. You know,
exactly.
We are going to find our own directive. We are going to find our own source of enlightenment and or a potential drive for our own well-being. You know,
so it's the old
take
your fuel.
People are out of work. Yeah, people are out of work. People are out of fuel. You drop the price of the fuel. It's like if I don't have a job, I still don't have the money to pay for the cheap fuel.
Yeah.
We squeezed this so hard that now we have to wake up and create our own divine environment to where we will take control.
And it is great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's wake up.
To me, it's wonderful because the need for this kind of realization on the part of everyone who uses energy, that not only is it expensive, but also we're contributing to the general degradation of the environment by our use of these products. So if it's the price of fuel that gets us interested in alternatives, but then we realize, you know what, there is an alternative, it does exist, why have I been doing what I've been doing to this planet?
Yeah. Yeah,
you know.
it wakes up the general consciousness to, you know, I mean, I've developed and designed organic gardens all over the United States for many years and inside projects when I'm not touring and things like that, and setting up them as cooperatives to where, like, okay, I'm not going to go weed your garden. You're coming in, you're going to weed a garden, and you're participating in your own health and well-being. And after they start running through that process, it's like, you know, I could have done this all along. It's like one of those, wow, I could have had a V8 kind of things. It's like, yes, you have.
Yeah.
You know, because it was born with you. It's like, you know, to grow something and or to sustain yourself was given you as a gift at birth. And to become a lumen to it is your awakening, you know, to find that, well, this has been my path all along. And then that's where we come.
Well, there's no question that a person is much happier when they're doing something positive instead of being a bystander or just a passive consumer. There's definitely more joy in life when a person is personally involved in doing something positive for the common good.
Yeah.
And getting involved in a group as well, you know, a group therapy, if you want to call it that, a group activity like we had at your place or at the HHO Games, which we can also comment on. You know, where you got people coming together in a positive mindset to share something good and to, you know, help each other out.
Yeah. Well, where it's gone now, I mean, like you said, you know, between Larry's and what we've done here at the Ruskin and what we did down at the HHO Games, is like the people are coming with open ears, open eyes, and open arms to just embrace everything that we've got. And they're willing to have anything given to them with some positive aspect of it. If they don't feel that it's working for them, they go over to, you know, the 5 gallon bucket that we saw that was putting out about a liter a day, which was amusing, but it was there, you know, it was represented.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, and they believe in what they were doing in that process. And that's
and
all.
And you know
good.
What? If it is a stepping stone to greater things, so be it.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
I mean, eventually, if somebody takes a couple paper clips and a little wall wart and they produce hydrogen and oxygen in a glass in their kitchen, at least it's a start.
Yeah.
You
well,
know?
I have mine started with, you know, a 12-volt battery, jumper cables, and landscape staples, you know, just galvanized staples that got stuck into a bottle of water. And about 3 hours later, I had one bubble, and I was like, yeah, that was good.
Yeah. That got you. Okay,
yeah.
So let's go on to the real crux of why we were doing this interview in the first place, and that was to reveal something that you and Kim discovered. What was it you actually did? What was your setup, and what was the discovery?
Well, from at the Ruskin Show, well, at Larry's and at the Ruskin Show, I've been working on what the project is. It's on the Alternative Energy Show and Tell, that what I just call the Grid Eliminator X1. I just have, it's a 5.5 horse motor with two General Motors alternators on there, 60 amp alternators, runs four batteries, recharges it, and it runs on an inverter. Outside of all that, there's a hydrogen fuel cell that, or fuel generator that is off to the side. And at after we had done the original test, we had a certain amount of output, and we were able to run for about 3.5 minutes, totally 100% on the hydroxyl. And then we did another setup of passivating or electropolishing the plates and then setting them in the cell with a side curtain on them to eliminate any leakage on the side. At the display that we had here in Ruskin, we were able to show that at 1 liter per minute output of the cell, you would have increased 100 RPMs on the 5.5 horse motor. Well, here in the last couple of days, we've done a test where it's like, I don't want to be the one to say, this is impossible, it can't happen, it breaks all laws of physics, Faraday was wrong. I want everyone else to be involved. I want everyone else to follow the design. The parameters that I put in the thing has been, a year in the making of magnetic measurements, everything, to where we came up with numbers that are physically impossible. I had to call Larry himself and say, okay, I can't do the math with what everybody's doing with the MMW. I wanted to know what Faraday's law was, and then we still had to decipher what Faraday really meant when he was talking about this, or he was talking about that, ambient temperature, atmospheric conditions, the whole nine yards. And we were starting to come across to where at the end of the first part of the test, we were at about 200% of the Faraday efficiency. Well, yesterday we went through a test where, okay, all cards are pulled off the table. Let's just, I got the cell that everybody can see on the Eliminator X1 on the website. We hooked up the batteries at 24 volts, ran all 8 cells in series, and we didn't recharge anything. We let it decay all the way down because we wanted to find the sweet spot from, it started out at 25.8 volts, and it decayed all the way down to, which would be 14.42. There's, at 14.42, that's when we had the last of amperage flow through the cell. At 14.64, we still had 1/10 of an amp flowing through, which, the way the cell is designed, that comes out to 0.915 volts. Now, Faraday says that 1.25 is Earth voltage, and that is where the electrolysis will begin. Now, in this test, we just had the two 12-volt batteries from Walmart hooked in series to the cell, and let it fall in decay on its own, no source of regeneration of any power whatsoever. And
were these deep cycle batteries, like marine batteries or something?
No, not deep cycle. They're just regular Walmart.
Regular automotive batteries?
Yeah, just regular automotive batteries. There's nothing special. It's, I don't know, it's a piece of crap battery. As far as if you really want to make this thing really work in the divine world, it's a piece of crap battery. So it was nothing significant about the battery. But we just let the battery decay without any source of regeneration of power to, like, oh, we want to stay at, like, 18.6 and, keep that going for, like, 30 minutes and see where it goes. No. We let it decay on its own and find the measurements every 2.5 minutes. We're measuring it and going down, going down, going down. And we let it just fall till the absolute movement stop electrically and organically. There's no more. There's not even one more bubble coming out. We had a 5 micron filter or bubbler on the end of the line, so that we were able to hold a 3 pound pressure on the manifold for extended periods. I mean, this thing took all day. It was forever. But we were able to get down to, everything ceased to flow and make a single bubble at 0.9012 volts. But we had flow at 0.915 volts. And that's not at a full potassium hydroxide. We have, it's about a pound and a half per 3 gallons of water, which is not even, that's like 12%. It's not even like where it should be. But after the passivation, things are happening that cannot be explained. I can't put it into words, and I don't want to be the one to say this. I want someone else to duplicate the test in their space outside of our magnetic region. Let it be geographically somewhere else in the world. They can go to the site, look at the cells. I've got pictures. There's circles, diagrams, all of the circles, everything, arrows on the back to describe everything. What's happening is the way the arrangement of the plate is set up, there's a magnetic reflection that's taking off of the, I'm doing double anodic and cathodic regions with a single neutral in each plate. They've been passivated, so there's no more contamination of the surface. But when it's set up after the third day of conditioning the water, it's still able to produce gas. I mean, if you have a lightning storm outside, you're going to have gas movement. The ion exchange runs through the plates, the plastic, the potassium, the water. The water is nothing. It's Walmart's, you know, 90 or 75 cents a gallon distilled water. There's nothing spectacular about the water. The plates, there's nothing spectacular. It's 316L, been passivated or electropolished, reconditioned, put back in the plates, set up with a nylon bolt through the center.
Now, back up just a minute. You used a word that I think we need to clarify. You said reconditioned?
Yeah. It's not in its raw state anymore.
But, in other words, passivation does away with what many people are calling conditioning of the plates, right?
Yeah. Well, Bob Boyce has a whole page on setting up the conditioning of the plates, and I believe in some part of his he talks about using the sodium hydroxide for the plates. But I had done a vinegar conditioning of the plates, which is just an acid, you know, where it's like an hour on, hour off, 2 hours on, 2 hours off, 3 hours on, 3 hours off, up until you get to 6 hours. Then you run it for 48 hours straight through to try and remove the iron oxide that's there and set up a magnetic balance in the material itself so that when the water is subjugated to the current you're putting on there, you're getting a polarity alignment where as soon as you turn the cell on, the negative is pointing towards the positive and the positive is pointing towards the negative. So the water itself, like in a Joe cell, it's already got an electrical potential ready for release. You're not breaking the barrier, but you're setting up a condition where the capacitor is just about to discharge. And that's kind of what the cell is, you know. It's an electrolytic capacitor, but it's not a true dielectric because, you know, we've got the potassium hydroxide in it.
So, in a word, though, are we to understand then that when you've had your plates electropolished, you don't need to worry about going through this conditioning phase?
No.
That's a thing of the past.
It's subjugated to the 20 volts DC 600 amps. For an extended period of time, where the iron oxide is removed to a certain depth, to where if we don't break that threshold or that barrier, that there's no more iron coming out, so there's no more sludge that we have to deal with, and with the chromium being brought to the surface, and that it frees it up from contamination from any outside source.
Okay, I did have another question that had come up a couple weeks ago, and I thought this would be a good time to ask it as well. Zero Fossil Fuel has pointed out that a toxic byproduct of electrolysis using stainless steel plates is
hexane chromium.
Right.
Yeah.
And my question is, when you've subjected plates or tubes or whatever you're using as electrodes to passivation, and then you use them in a cell, have you done away with that danger?
Not
of creating
done,
that toxic?
No, I can't say that you've done away with that danger, but through what Dustin does at his facility is he removes through a filter the what has been drawn out. So what you as an individual, after you receive the product from him, the chances of the hexane chromium being released from the product is reduced.
That's what we need to know. We need to know the numbers on that.
Dustin has actually signed on to the site now, and he is totally willing to work with all of us on any of the science that we want to deal with this. His father started the business, and he took the business over from him, and there's manuals. He says that there's, you know, about 6 inches thick of all the chemical processes involved with everything, and he'd be more than willing to explain to someone what's going on in the thing.
Yeah, I think it would be good for the sake of everyone involved in hydroxy technology to find out if it's possible to avoid the creation of this toxic byproduct by having plates properly electropolished ahead of time.
Well, I think the process itself is part of that leachate process where that chromium being brought to the surface now is no longer removed from the surface. It's stabilized at the surface. Where we are now.
So that would be a good thing to find out.
To excrete more of that out would be trying to excrete more of the iron oxide out of the plate itself. You know,
and that isn't going to happen.
You have to reach another threshold. And
right.
What his process does is brings us a tenfold above the process we're using. You know, I mean, even if we use a Bob cell, we're still, one-fifth or one-sixth of that voltage or amperage that we're using. So, but Dustin is more than willing to explain that to anyone and the process and be willing to research the diagnostics of are we reducing to a toxic level the surface or the tension of the surface to create another hazardous environment, putting into a plastic bag into the ground where it's going to last over another 1,000 years. Are we going to do that with the stainless now, at this time, and what the projects that we're trying to play with?
Now, for the sake of those who don't know what we're talking about when we say the site where such contact with Dustin can be made, we're talking about the wetpaint.com site, right?
Yeah.
And so maybe we could help listeners figure out how to get there and what they can expect to find when they go there.
Well, fortunately, you were the one that helped start it for us, and it's you can just type in energyshowandtell.wetpaint.com. It's an alternative show and tell for various, various different energies and technologies for alternatives, to what we have as the standards right now.
We must point out that I haven't been doing anything at the wet paint site. You've been shouldering the burden of loading a tremendous amount of information and videos and pictures, and you've done a very good job of moderating it, if you want to call that.
Yeah, well,
it is sort of like a check.
You pointed out to me, otherwise I'd be paying for all this stuff, and my pockets are empty. I can't pay for anything.
Yeah, so wet paint, for anyone listening, is a free site, so anyone can start such a page there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Especially to get the information out to everyone. It's free, and there's other things that within the patent pages that are on the site. I found another company called DocStock.com where you can take a PDF, transfer it over, or convert it over to Word again, and post it right into DocStock and put it on there so that someone doesn't have to download an Adobe Reader to see a PDF. You can print directly from it. You can magnify it because my eyes are going shot like everybody else's. But there's a magnifying glass there. You can bring it right up and look at it, and you can see it. You don't have to go to your toolbar. You can print directly from the page. But the wet paint I'm totally sold on it. I mean, it has its own quirks, you know, with certain things, because you have to sign on to somebody else and get things put in there because the way the widgets work. But once you figure out the format and how it works, it's all free, it's information, it's worldwide, and, you know, it gets the information out of what you want to try and say. But, yeah, it's energyshowandtell.wetpaint.com. There's several pages in there to let everybody know about what they want to see, do, hear, feel. It don't cost anything to sign in. Once you sign in and register, if you have something interesting to say, give me an idea what you want to see, or give somebody else on there an idea what you want to see, and we're trying to turn it around that way. And or if you're, you know, if you want to be a writer, just let us know you want to be a writer. You got something really heavy to say, but it don't cost anybody anything. This is technology and information that has been here forever, and we're just sharing it with everyone. You know?
Yeah,
I mean,
I've been doing a lot there,
but it's like, you know, when I'm not sleeping, there's something else to do.
Well, it's a very positive activity. It's good. It's a good hobby.
Yeah.
Now, let's go back to your experiment, though, because we never really did get to the final results of the experiment, did we?
Oh, no. Okay, so here we are. Yesterday, we're setting up at the 24-volt battery hookup to the cell, which is 8 cells in series with a single neutral, double anodic, and cathodic hookup. Everything can be seen on the site. We started out at 25.8 volts, and we did the time to where just let it decay on its own, no recharge. And like I said, the shutoff was at 14.42 volts, which comes out to 0.9012 volts. And that's where all flow stopped, all gas, all amperage, everything. Well, we didn't put it down to a milliamp, but that's where the noticeable, a single bubble releasing from the cell stops. But we did have action at 14.64 at 0.1 amp, which came out to 0.915 volts, which Faraday says that 1.25, the Earth voltage, is where it should begin, or that is where there's reflection and there should be no progression. We found I personally found a sweet spot in along the decay and up to the arrival of where we were. And the day before yesterday, I had to call Larry Jarbo, and I had to get his Faraday's formula that he was using, because I'd been using the MMW that Zero Fossil Fuels had been putting together, and I didn't want the mass of the community saying, okay, well, you can't use that as a standard because it's not recognized. I wanted to know what someone else was using that is an established measurement of unit of gas. When I talked to Larry the day before yesterday, we had gotten to just at 200% Faraday. Well, yesterday, when we let the decay product go through, I had 21 volts, 5.1 amps, which comes out to 107.1 watts. I had 2.341 liters per minute, which comes out in the MMW, unfortunately. It comes out to 21.848 MMW, which is three times Faraday. It's 300%.
Wow.
Now, I don't want to be the one to say, okay, well, this is a hoax, it doesn't happen. I want anyone to take and look at the site, take the measurements off the photos. They're totally, I hide nothing from anyone. There's pictures, there's a ruler there, the cells are specific length, the plates are specific length, they're set up in a specific order, magnetic reflection has been observed. Induction has been observed. All of it has been observed when I tried to develop this cell. Passivation was what made the change to a level where I can't explain it. I don't want to be the one to explain it. I want someone else to come up to the plate and say, this is correct. This is where the numbers are, and yes, it can be reproduced. Because I live in Florida. if you're up in Michigan, maybe the magnetic polarity there is different. You know, it's going to produce, the, I don't know, 15% less. But I'm not doing anything outwardly outrageous. There's no, you know, amethyst quartz sitting next to anything to try and bring the granola and patchouli people up to the par. This is just anything that anybody can do. It's a simple process, and we unloaded everything yesterday. We're going to filter everything out to make sure it's all clean, put it back in again, and fire it up again. I'm going to try and get videos of everything so I can post it on the site.
That would be great.
Yeah, because, I mean, the way this is working is like this. I'm telling Tim all day long, this is physically impossible. This cannot happen. This is wrong. It's not. This is not happening. It's impossible. So do it again, do it again, do it again, until this can be denied in our little world down here. I'm going to keep on with this test because there's nothing complex about it. It's no brain surgery. And the gentleman that you talked to today, Dana Smith, with Daewoo.
Ethos.
And they're working with Daewoo to produce this vehicle, you know, and he talked about, and you brought it up with him, about the passivation, where they solve three problems at once by doing passivation, you know, with the mud and, you know, because the current drops, the gas goes up, and the mud goes away. There's three
well,
right there.
You could say there's a fourth issue that's also resolved. Didn't you find that it wasn't necessary to use anything in the water to make it
yeah, as soon as it comes back, yeah, as soon as it comes back from being passivated, disassemble the cell, throw it into pure distilled water. There is a measurable gas output after passivation. You know, whereas before that, it's like, yeah, about, give me about 3 hours, I'll give you a bubble.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you actually see gas production as a result of passivation without adding any kind of electrolyte. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, these are things worth pursuing for others to look at the video you're going to post and then try to replicate it and get a better understanding of what's happening.
Yeah, that and or just go to the site, look at all the pictures. It's the Grid Eliminator X1. Just sign on to the site, ask any questions you want. I'll give you the dimensions. The dimensions are in the pictures. There's a ruler there that gives it. Do the test yourself. My pockets are empty. I can only go so fast so far. If anybody else has all kinds of capital and they want to redo it, I want the world to know that, yes, this is possible. You produce it, you reproduce it, you make the millions on it, fine. I don't care. I just want to know that, yes, Faraday was wrong.
Well, and we know that Faraday, for instance, didn't have access to electrodes
that
had electropolished.
And or the materials, the quality of the materials we have is that, yeah.
Exactly. So I think Faraday was a truly marvelous man, a genius scientist, and we owe him a tremendous debt of gratitude for his hard work. But, you know, I don't think he was so arrogant as to imply that his law was binding on future generations
and their
efforts to produce hydrogen from water.
No, I think he had somebody else that wrote everything up for him, and he said something and they misinterpreted it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but to the best of his ability, this is what he came up with. So many liters per watt, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Liters per minute per watt, is that the formula?
Yeah, liters per minute per watt, yeah.
Okay, well, Spodi, it's been nice talking to you again. Hopefully we'll get some good feedback from people attempting to replicate what you've done and explain exactly
what's
going on.
Oh, we never did get to talk about HHO Games.
Yeah, what was your favorite in conclusion? What would you like to say the most impressive thing or the best thing that you think came out of the HHO Games?
The ones that I were talking on and is on other people's videos was the VMU that comes out of what used to be HHO Forever out of Texas. Ralph Gugar and George Papp from the Mileage Seekers, which are on the site. It's an onboard diagnostic system that you can control on the fly. And to me, that was better than sliced bread, because, I mean, that deals with the electronic control of the MAP sensor, the O2 sensor, the PWM, the temperature of your cell. You can set it up for all various, and it's just a PIC controller. But it works so sweet. And then the gentleman who did the what I put in is, I just put a video together, it's called New Meth. I've got more editing to do to put the guy's information on there. But it's the next level of a series cell, which is the plastic mold and the seal, the way it seals, except for variables for electric and current setup, where, you know, machining on the steel is just cut square by square, plate, throw it in there, and call it beautiful. And then what else was there that was beautiful? That 5-gallon bucket, that was cool. You know, that big gold 10-inch by, I don't know, about 24-inch high cell that made probably a liter per day or per 2 days. That was pretty impressive. But, hey, he had the product there, and it was displayed, you know, and that's exactly what he believed in, and it was all good, you know, but it was amusing.
Well, and it shows what happens when you have limited information.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Limited information leads to the creation of that kind of product.
Yeah, exactly.
It sort of reminds me of those old, the old newsreel footage of people's airplane designs, you know, from the early 20th century, and they had all kinds of crazy bat wing like things that flashed and everything else.
Yeah.
You know, it shows the failures of all those all those early airplane designs.
Yeah. Well, that's why I keep going back to, like I put on the site, the Otto Langen engines, which are the first, not the first, but first production hydrogen engines, and the way that it launches the piston in the air, and then it has a ratchet drive that brings it down at a constant velocity speed to keep the flywheel going like an old hit and miss. But I got a couple of videos posted on the website about that, and it's like, that stuff is really cool, because it doesn't matter what you put in for the gas, it only fires up so high. I mean, if you really put in enough, it's like, it might be topping out, but that's like 3.5 foot high before it tops out. That's a lot of gas. So, yeah, all the technologies are coming together.
Yeah, well, it's nice to be able to have a part in it, and I really appreciate the hard work that you and Kim have put into, you know, actually doing the hands-on and sponsoring an event, and then working so hard to post all this information on wet paint for the benefit of people around the world. And you did mention that you noticed a great deal of interest in Europe in the wet paint side, huh?
Yeah. Europe is really starting to pay. Europe, and we're actually in Japan in one of their technical magazines now. From the site has posted it on theirs. But Europe is definitely hitting it, and Australia and New Zealand are definitely hitting the site right now, too. So, there are people that are coming in, getting interested, looking at it, and the speech that Bob gave there at the Ruskin show, people are really enamored about that, the cell that we saw there sitting on the table, you know, the one called the cell.
Yeah,
and
the blue one.
I mean, because that is a commercially viable product. That is beautiful. It looks nice. We haven't seen any gas output of it, but yet it still is. It has the look that everyone desires to have in a, you know, plug and play kind of environment for their car.
Right.
Yeah. And then they're hitting Bob's videos like amazing, and it's like, hello.
Yeah, well, he's a well-respected figure to be following.
Well, even you're becoming famous now with the Kids Science Program. You know, they're starting to watch that thing all the time now. Because the Kids Science Program itself, what we did set up was for the kids to explain it. Every one of the inventors, developers, and yourself would bring it down to a level to where a child can understand it. And those who don't want to feel that they don't have the intelligence to understand, they can still understand the technology from what that was related to a child.
Yeah,
and
well, it's nice seeing children involved
that way. Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know,
it's my
superior
grandson.
Energy technology is all about doing what the best we can for our children or our grandchildren.
Yeah,
and so
exactly.
Seeing young people involved is entirely appropriate.
Oh, that's the other one. It's Panacea Bocaf, Building Our Children of the Future. They've put us as a link on their site now, so which that means that we're encompassing the entire world now. So, you know, if somebody goes to Panacea, they click on us, they can come back to us and see what we've got going. And you started the whole thing. So
yeah.
The information
is all interconnected,
out,
isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's really cool. Well, like I said, I listened to Dana Smith that you talked to today, and it clicked back again. It's like, you know, the collective consciousness is coming to the point where right now we're at the prime space of let's share it all and let's become one.
Yeah, it's a fascinating time to be alive and to be watching it happen and even to be participating in what's happening.
I'm totally happy to see my grandchildren witness it, educate themselves with it, and explain it back to me.
Yeah, this is something that we'll have to really cherish in the future, the ability to participate in what is really a revolution, energy revolution that's starting at the grassroots level, and who knows where it'll end. But thank you so much for your time and your efforts.
Oh, it's always my pleasure. Always
and we'll
my
look
pleasure.
Forward to following up on this with more information as we get some validation of the numbers that you've come up with.
Yeah, and there again, we'll go back to energyshowandtell.wetpaint.com. You started it. I'm filling in the holes. And there's other people now starting to fill in the holes. So hopefully everybody will get, sign in. It don't cost anything. Just sign in. Give what you got. Share it with everybody.
Great. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, take care. Have a good evening, and look forward to more in the future.
Oh, yeah. Good.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.